Last case on our calendar, 04-1808, Columbus Bar Association versus Kim Halliburton Cohen. Mr. Heald.
Please, the court, Mr. Chief Justice, other justices, my name is Anthony M. Heald. I am here on behalf of the respondent, Kim Halliburton Cohen. I would like to request a reservation of 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this is a case about a fee dispute that arose between my client and an individual who hired her to represent her in a domestic relations matter. This case had originally worked its way to the point that there was an effort at an agreement for consent to discipline that was rejected by the panel, and then a hearing was had. The issue that we are here about is a reasonably direct and distinct one, and that is whether or not the panel's determination that there was a violation of 2-110A3 occurred in this case. I believe it would be instructive to provide the court with a little bit of background about this matter. My client was disciplined in 2002. That disciplinary proceeding resulted in her being granted monitored probation. As a result of that, she met regularly with a monitor designated by the relator in this case, the Columbus Bar Association. On March 29th of 2002, which was her first meeting with the individual who was designated by the Columbus Bar Association, she reviewed with him many things, but among them was the fee agreement and the specific language that was presented in the letter of agreement that occurred in this case. At that time, as the panel correctly found, there were no changes either suggested or made to the so-called lost opportunity fee language. On October,
so, Counselor, what you're saying is that this letter was drafted and pretty much run by the monitor, which was the condition of her previous discipline, and the stamp of approval given. No red flags at that time that this might be an inappropriate way to approach your fee arrangement with a client.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Are you arguing that because the monitor failed to notice that this was problematic, that it's a pass here?
No, not at all, Your Honor. In fact, if the court will note, ultimately, as part of the attempt at consent to discipline and the stipulations that were entered in front of the panel, we acknowledge that the provision is not appropriate in this kind of a case. We do believe that it is important in terms of what the proper disposition of this matter is, that this was not something that was done in any form that was secretive or misleading, and that in fact this was vetted or reviewed by the monitor, along with many other things, to make sure there wasn't going to be a problem. In October of 2002, Ruth Goldman approached my client about her being represented in a domestic relations matter in the Franklin County Common Pleas Court. The contract was reviewed by the parties in detail. It was executed. A retainer was paid. Thereafter, Ms. Goldman decided that she wanted to have different legal counsel. And on the seventh day of November of 2002, she, by email, confirmed to my client that she was going to seek different counsel and ask for a refund of fees under the contract. Further, she asked if my client would be willing to agree to fee arbitration with the Columbus Bar Association. By return email, as it is stipulated, My client said yes. Be happy to do that. In addition to that, 2 days later, she returned all of the funds that were consistent with the lost opportunity fee. Thereafter, in December,
Was that part of this $1,900?
Yes. The $1,900, Your Honor, would have been if the lost opportunity fee had been determined to be appropriate, then
so
I don't believe we would be here having a dispute.
So that's $1,500 plus $400 in what she considered earned fees.
No. She received, she refunded $1,900, which would have been everything under the letter of agreement except for the lost opportunity fee and a very small amount for the opening of a file and some other unrelated matters.
So I'm a little confused. What does the $1,900 she refunded, does not consider the $1,500?
Yes, it does. Yes,
okay,
it does.
Okay, so $1,500 of the $1,900 is the
lost opportunity.
She considered herself having earned the rest?
Yes.
Except for $400.
Yes. Well, not except for $400.
Why did she pay back $400 more?
It was her belief, and it was later verified by virtue of the itemized billing that was done after this complaint was filed, and in anticipation of the fee arbitration that everybody had asked for and agreed to. That there would have been $172.70 more than my client had returned to her to be returned.
Okay, so she returned $1,900, and she claims she should have returned $1,730. So she's disputing $173 that she already gave back?
No. It's the other way around. In other words, the amount that would have been she would have owed an additional $172.70.
To the client?
Correct.
And so we're really here arguing over $173 because she didn't pay it. The Bar Association said she should have paid it. She says she can't find the client. Is that the crux of why we're here? That seems to be the main issue in this case, as far as I could tell.
That is certainly the main issue in this case. It is important, Your Honor, to note that, as is stipulated as part of the stipulations of fact in front of the panel, that my client, both before she was represented by me and since she was represented by me, offered to repay the $172.70.
Why didn't she?
Because Ms. Goldman now lives in Israel.
She knows Ms. Goldman's address.
No, we don't.
And that's the Bar Association alleges they have it.
I'm aware of that.
And you didn't test it to see if it's a good address? You didn't send a check, money order?
Did not send a check. I would indicate to the court that there was never a fee arbitration meeting discussion, that my client, as soon as this complaint was filed, changed her fee arbitration agreement or her fee contract to delete in its entirety any mention of this sort of a charge, that the finding of the monitor was not just on that occasion but throughout the period of time that she was meeting the monitor, that she had done everything that the monitor directed her to do.
So what are you asking for in this case? What are you?
Very simply stated, Your Honor, we believe that the issue of whether or not there was a violation of 2-110A3, we believe that the panel's determination that that was the case is inappropriate. As the court will see in the stipulations between the Columbus Bar Association and my client, it was stipulated that there was no violation of DR 110A3. I realize the panel can disagree with that, but the facts, we would respectfully submit that not just the stipulation, but the facts that underline this case support the stipulation that was made not just by us, but also by the relator, that this is not a case where there's a violation of it.
Counsel, your violation, your objections here are based on the fact that she's saying, I can't send the $172 to her because I don't know her address and because I'm precluded from finding out I'm not intentionally not sending her back. She agrees she owes the $172. She just says, I can't get a letter to Israel because I don't know the address to mail her a check.
Don't know the address.
That's your basis here, right, for saying that there's no violation of DR2 110A3.
That's correct.
You're not having a problem with the proposed sanctions here of six-month stayed.
Your Honor, the fact that no, we did not appeal that would indicate that we believe that the sanctions, which were, my client has in essence been on probation since 2002 because the prior probation couldn't end because of the pendency of this matter. But if that is that's not the basis of our appeal. The basis of our appeal, or our objection, excuse me, my apologies, is that this simply did not rise to the level of being a violation of that DR. Perhaps a small matter, but we believe an important one, and that is the basis of what we are arguing in this case.
So you would then say there was a good faith effort, is that what you're representing, that there was a good faith effort on your client's behalf to get this $172 back to her former client?
Most assuredly. I would indicate to the court that, again, if you look at the stipulations, the consent to stipulations, everything that existed in this case, everybody agreed we tried to do it. This was never a case where that was going to be the issue. All we needed to do was have the way to do that. Thank you. Another question? I'll reserve the time that I have.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, Mr. Heald. Frankly, there's not a great deal for the relator to say here, and I'll be brief, subject, of course, to questions by the Court. I was going to say that we do not disagree with Respondent's Counsel's brief, save the one issue that we did brief, which is that the board was not out of line in finding that there was a violation of 2110A3. However, I have to start by saying that we do disagree with his statements today that this is a fee dispute case. It is a great deal more than a fee dispute case, and that pales in comparison to the rest of the substance of the case. And it is not a case about $173 and returning it. We are not here to disown the stipulations into which we entered, and we stand behind them. We have also not filed objections regarding the board's finding that DR-1104 was not violated in substance in this case. Our only real point of departure concerns the board's conclusion that the respondent violated DR-2110A3 and the suggestion that this finding was not supported by the evidence in the record. To be sure, the stipulations did include a statement that the evidence developed prior to the hearing did not support that finding. The stipulations also provided that the respondent did return to the client the bulk of the funds which the client was entitled to. At the hearing, however, the panel questioned respondent about the fee issue, among other things, and in the course of that questioning, additional matters not contained in the stipulations were adduced. Judge Street, the chair of the panel, ask the respondent how she arrived at the $1,500 amount that she returned to the client After the two of them decided on November the 7th of 2002 that they should not be lawyer and client. And her response to that was, I'm fairly good at keeping records in my head. I knew it was about $1,500, but it was possible that I had done work totaling $1,700. Later on, she refers to the $1,500 figure as a guesstimate. Nonetheless, she used that figure when she made her initial return of money to the client. Judge Street also asked her why that she was asked whether or not that $1,500 that was returned represented the lost opportunity fee or whether it was part of the money that was advanced for hourly fees. And she said that it was the latter and not the former. Judge Street asked to see a copy of the billing statement that was finally produced nearly 2 months later by her accountant, and that led to this discrepancy of $173. And that became a part of the record. It's hearing exhibit one. Also entered into the record was hearing exhibit two, which is the email message by which the respondent responded to the client's suggestion of fee arbitration. And I think that that bears reading, if for no other reason than the tone of that message to the then former client and her statement that her fee contract carries the provisions that it does because of people like you. In any event, the board found that on November the 7th of 2002, Ms. Gouldman had requested a refund of all sums due her under the fee contract, and that by December the 29th of 2002, respondent had itemized time records which indicated that she still owed the client money, to wit, $173. It concluded from that fact and from the fact that for whatever reason she didn't return that money. And by the way, her original reason for not returning that was that because there was going to be an arbitration and the client was actually claiming that the whole of the retainer was due as a refund, that she was holding on to the $173. In any event, it is our belief that the discretion of the board, and this court, of course, is in no way hemmed in by stipulations crafted by the parties.
Counsel, do you in fact have Mrs. Goldberg's address?
I do.
And have you ever been asked for it by the other side?
I in fact sent it to him.
Was this information presented to the board, that you had the address and that you had sent it to them?
I'm not sure that it's in the record. What happened was, prior to the hearing in this case in August, we were, in essence, negotiating about the stipulations, and it wasn't clear whether or not we were going to be able to stipulate the case. And Mr. Heald and I talked about the possibility of deposing by telephone Mrs. Gouldman, who is in Israel. At one point, I sent him an email containing her phone number, her email address, which had not changed from the one that his client used when this case was active, and also her her physical address. So he did have the means to contact her. And certainly, had we been asked to, we would have been a conduit for those funds if he wished to return them. In any event, simply put, the relator contains that notwithstanding the stipulations, the panel and the board were within their prerogatives of reaching the conclusions that they did on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you.
Mr. Heald, you saved 3 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
First, the suggestion that there was that it was later developed that Ms. Gouldman wanted all of the money back, not part of the money, all of the money back, is not borne out either by the stipulations or, in fact, by relator's brief. The fact is that her position was she didn't owe anybody any money. It is furthermore, I believe, respectfully, not accurate to portray the providing of an itemized statement in this case as something that happened some 2 months later. What happened in this case was that there was a request under the contract to return the fees. The $1,900 was returned. On the 17th day of December, my client was for the first time served with a complaint. 12 days later, the itemized statement was submitted.
Counsel, did you get the letter or the email that gave you the address, the email address, the telephone number for this woman in Israel?
I got an email address with a phone number. I didn't get an email address with an address.
So you would dispute that you had this information?
That's right. I would need to go back and check, Your Honor, but I don't believe it was in August.
Well, couldn't you use the email address in Israel to communicate with the client and asking her for a mailing address?
Certainly, Your Honor. The whole situation here is this, and I don't know, maybe I'm incorrect in what was said in the stipulations. I don't believe so. We not only said then, but said on every occasion that we could and in the stipulations that we will return that money.
I guess the problem we have is the difference between saying you'll return the money and taking an affirmative action and doing so. And I just, it's like, why is she paying you a heck of a lot more money than it would have taken to write a check and get it in the mail? I guess that just confuses me.
Okay. And I guess the only thing I can say in response, Your Honor, is that we met four times before we ever got to the consent to discipline phase, and I believe that was discussed every time. At that point, I believe that it was not the case that the relator knew where they knew Ms. Goldman was in Israel. In fact, during the period of time when they found Ms. Goldman again, they actually ended up calling my client because they thought that was Ms. Goldman's phone number. Of course, it wasn't, but eventually they did locate her in some way. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn the court.
All rise.